Welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm Kristen Malavenda. Glad to have you all along today. And in the studio with me this week is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Kristen.
If you have a question for Mayor Dennis, go ahead and give us a call at 765-496-1999. Email us at ask@wbaa.org or send a tweet to @WBAA News. Well, I mentioned at the top of the show, the Purdue students are wrapping up another academic year. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering for you how it's different to be the mayor of a city where tens of thousands of residents hightail it for 3 months of the year.
It is a dramatic change, specifically when you come to talk about traffic, when you talk about the evening pedestrian traffic, when you talk about the volume of trash, when you talk about some of the odd complaints that we get throughout the course of an academic year. It's incredible. I mean, you have 40,000 student residents and about half of them leave during the summer season. And it's a noticeable absence because we really enjoy what they bring to our community. You know, we've got kids from all around the world and they bring their different cultures and ideas to West Lafayette, and we really enjoy having them around. But the other oddity is that when they decide to leave, oftentimes they leave a lot of their, shall we say, personal possessions behind.
Out on the street, perhaps.
Out on the street. And that's actually, and I'm sure this is probably something we can segue into, that's one of the reasons why we have the dumpster program. And it really was, that specifically was based on just years of our sanitation guys having to drive all over town to pick up some of that refuge. So it's something that we've utilized, and it's been very effective over the past few years.
Tens of thousands of tons of things, some mm-hmm. years, right, between couches mm-hmm. and mattresses and things that people, they're not going to mm-hmm. take it with them, so just put it on the corner.
And you have no idea some of the sweetness that goes into those big toters, those big bins. Probably one of the funniest stories, though, before we got the bins up, what we use is one of our graphic representations of how creative our student population can be. There's a small cul-de-sac in the city of West Lafayette, and it's surrounded by rental properties. And our then street commissioner, Dave Downey, called me up and he said, "Hey, Mayor, you got to come by and check this out." And, you know, always open for an entertaining opportunity. And we drove into this cul-de-sac, and in the back of the cul-de-sac, a complete living room was set up. It had end tables. It had a formal table. It had a couch. It had easy chairs. It had lamps. It had a stereo system. I mean, the whole thing was set up, and there was nobody around. I mean, everybody was gone because, you know, the students had left. And I thought, well, that's a creative way to
there
say
you
goodbye.
Go. Well, at least it's organized, at least. Do you ever do anything? Like, if people leave stuff out that's in good condition, do you have the ability to give it to a social service agency, or it really just all has to go into the dumpster?
Once it hits the dumpster, it's pretty much got to go. And because of that, there's a lot of folks who also contribute. It's not just students. You know, it's an excellent time for a lot of folks to get rid of some of their personal property. You know, we don't like to advertise the fact that they're there because we get stuff from Frankfurt, from Crawfordsville, from Lafayette. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, if we don't open up that opportunity to our student population and some of our residents, a lot of that stuff ends up where it shouldn't be. In the past, again, we found them in you know, in cul-de-sacs.
Right.
And we found them in the dumpsters at stores. You find them on the road. You find them in the ditches, you know, around our community. So we feel that it's in our best interest to go ahead and designate some areas where they can get rid of some of that stuff. And that way it just makes it better for us all.
And so, of course, as the students, you hear their cars revving up and leaving town. Then you hear the bulldozers and all the road construction equipment heading into town.
Yes.
You know, I'm sure that's by design, because when the students aren't here, there's less traffic overall. Mm-hmm. But, of course, it doesn't make it any more fun if you're a regular, mm-hmm. you're a year-round resident of West Lafayette. Mm-hmm. What kind of things do we have to look forward to this summer?
Well, you know, the biggest project that we're going to get really moving down the road on, no pun intended, actually is going to be Happy Hollow. We have, over the past almost 8 years now, made it our number one priority to try and improve our transportation system within West Lafayette. We had a lot of rough roads. We had some areas that didn't have the designated bike paths. We had no trails in some of our major arterials. So we felt we really need to focus on that. And kudos go to our Public Works Director, Dave Buck. He has been obviously a very busy guy for several years now. And we're about there. You know, with Happy Hollow, with Lindbergh, to finish up Northwestern. And then we won't even talk about the State Street. But the fact of the matter is now's our prime time to get this done. And we work cooperatively with Purdue as well, so we can get some of the intersections properly signalized. We can get some of that real detail work done now in our community that we couldn't do when the students are here. And a lot of people don't really understand that we do have a plan. You know, it's not just random that we're going out there and saying, well, we're going to do that street today because it really needs it, or we're not doing that street even though it's in dire need of repair. We have a capital plan, and I think I've gone over this before on one of the radio shows, but we have a capital plan that we use as a funding mechanism to get some of these roads and some of the problems with those roads addressed. And right now, with Cumberland hopefully finishing up probably midsummer and Happy Hollow just starting this year, that's going to basically take a lot of our revenue and put it to good use. So our hope is that some of the secondary roads, we can use CDBG funding. We can always do some resurfacing work in our neighborhoods. And we also focus very heavily on sidewalks. And that's one of those things that when you're driving around, you really don't notice. But when you're walking around and you're pushing a stroller or you're jogging or you're riding a bike, if you had some inconsistencies in the level of your sidewalks, that really creates a problem. So we try and address that, you know, throughout the entire year. But specifically, you know, it really is go time when the students are gone. The traffic's less and the congestion is less. And it empowers us to go ahead and do some rerouting off of some of our major arterials to get that work done.
Is the Cumberland project on schedule? Or does it just feel like it's been going on forever, or is that a reality?
Have you been talking to some of the folks that live there? No, it's as close to on schedule as it can be. And again, that's one of those mysteries of construction that people, I guess, I didn't understand until I got this job, even though I had some stuff to do with roads when I was in the other city. The fact of the matter is that when you redo a road, specifically when it's a major arterial like Cumberland, and it's as long as Cumberland, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. And it's not just picking up the old road and putting down a new one. There's stuff underneath it. There's utilities underneath it. There's gas lines underneath it. There's water lines underneath it. There's power lines underneath it. There's cable lines underneath it, et cetera, et cetera. And all that needs to be addressed. And we as local government aren't in the position to determine when that's going to happen. We can't say, get here now, get that fixed, and get out. A lot of times the utility companies have to schedule it on their timeline. So what we do in the planning sessions, we try to figure out how is this best going to work? How is this going to be the least impactful negatively on our citizens? And how is it going to be the most efficient use of our time? And we come up with a plan. It's a construction plan. We have a lot of pre-construction meetings. And then when everything's signed off, it's go time. And then that's when things start to change.
Gotcha.
The fact of the matter is these roads, oftentimes what's underneath them, doesn't adhere to the plans that we've been given. It's like a spaghetti bowl in some cases with some of the utilities that are under there. And that's actually the hardest part of these jobs, is trying to get that stuff squared away and make it so that it's going to be a safe road. And then when we pass it off to the next generation and it's their turn to repair it, they can do it with much more efficiency and it's much simpler.
We do have a question from a listener. Says, why doesn't the city give residents the options of the size of trash bins and charge based on the size? Why should I have to pay for people who don't recycle and generate large amounts of trash?
That's a good question. And the reason for that is it's a pretty simple answer, because the revenue that we get from our sanitation department goes to support our sanitation department. You know, local government has very few businesses, and sanitation is one of our businesses. And it doesn't just go for trash, and it doesn't just go for recycling. That money also goes to staff the sanitation process. It also goes to equip the sanitation process. It also goes to assist us in some cases, some of our roads and streets. So there's a lot of stuff that fee pays for. And I believe we just raised that fee. It was just a few years ago, and that was the first time it had been raised in several years.
And there was quite a debate leading up to that about
Correct. What
form those mm-hmm. fees should take.
Correct. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, there has been some discussion early on in my first term about pay-as-you-throw or metered trash. And back then, as now, I feel that we're just not ready for that yet, because that's very labor intensive and we just haven't gotten the efficiencies down to where we could do that with any consistency. But it is. I know that I live in a neighborhood where there's a lot of folks that are much older than I am, and they don't throw away very much. They might have about a half of a plastic bag of trash, yet they're paying the same freight that somebody that has trash that goes all the way down to the end of their curb. And so it is an issue, and it does seem to be inequitable. But the fact of the matter is that for us to be able to have some level of predictability with that revenue stream, it's important that we have some consistency with price, and then it goes from neighborhood and from resident to resident.
If you have a question for Mayor Dennis, give us a call, 765-496-1999. Email us at ask@wbaa.org or send a tweet to @WBAAnews. We've got an email question. Because of the financial and social cost of imprisoning those who commit nonviolent crimes, the General Assembly's reduced marijuana sentences. For the same reason, some communities have made marijuana arrests a very low priority. What is the West Lafayette policy? Are marijuana arrests given low priority or not?
Well, a lot of times there's a presumption of some level of subjectivity when it comes to enforcing the law. And if police officers, it doesn't matter if you're in California or New York or West Lafayette, start using inappropriate discretion when it comes to enforcing the law, then that can challenge them insofar as their career, and it can challenge us as a city, because somebody could say, hey, you know, John got away with doing this, yet Kristen didn't. And so that creates challenges. You know, there is philosophically across the country now an easing on marijuana laws. I know most of the listeners probably are aware of the fact that I did spend some time in law enforcement prior to becoming mayor. And I know in the early years of my career, if somebody was in possession of marijuana, they did some hard time. They went to prison,
right,
and they did some hard time. Now, that has lightened up. I mean, that has become a little bit less severe than it was then. But I know, and then there are some states, obviously, where it's legal. Recreational use of marijuana is legal. But we're not there yet. And generally speaking, the groundwork for the easing of laws, whether it be a social issue or whether it be a criminal issue, doesn't start with any real success at the local level. You know, there has to be a groundswell that has to go to our state legislator, and that needs to be impressed upon them that, wait a second, you know, we have issues involving heroin, we have issues involving LSD, we have methamphetamine, we have crack cocaine. There's a lot of drugs out there that are very, very harmful. And then we have marijuana. And the perception is that marijuana, which is the naturally grown substance, shouldn't be treated as the same as these others. And that is something that has to be addressed at the state level.
Keeping along the drug theme here, Janet emailed, if someone feels very strongly that there's drug activity at a certain location and reports it to the authorities, how long of a process is it before it's addressed? They're talking about people who are dealing drugs.
We have a process in West Lafayette, and it's reflected over in Lafayette as well. We have what's called a drug task force. That's a communal group of folks whose sole purpose is to go ahead and work on information like that. But in West Lafayette, we also have a local group that basically does the same thing. Anytime anybody suspects any criminal activity, whether it be drugs, whether it be anything, they need to call the police and make a report. And again, sometimes there's some fear with that. You know,
right.
Sometimes feel, oh, my name's going to be on a report, and they're going to know it's me, and specifically if it's a neighbor. Well, we can assure you that that's not going to be the case. But the fact of the matter is that if we don't know about it, there's nothing that we can do about it. And so it's important that people make the call and let us know what we can do.
And then it is addressed fairly quickly, I
Absolutely,
would imagine.
Yeah. Specifically, especially with some of our task force, they get on it immediately.
And you still have a little bit of time to get a question in for Mayor Dennis. Again, the number is 765-496-1999. If you're on Twitter, tweet us at WBAAnews or send an email to ask@WBAA.org. Well, the primary election was just on Tuesday, but there wasn't one in West Lafayette.
I was going to say, really? Was
yeah,
it?
Exactly. There were no contested races. So does that concern you? Because generally the primary, if you haven't been paying attention, that kind of gets people into the political process. Mm-hmm. So leading up to November, are you worried about getting people engaged and out to the polls when they weren't engaged at all during the primary?
Absolutely. That's one of the things that we feel very strongly about. You know, for those of us that are picked for our jobs, you want to feel that a majority of the population picks you, or at least is in the process. And it seems like, you know, over the past few years, politicians, and I'm really not a real big fan of that term, seem to have the same reputation as used car dealers used to have. It's one of those jobs where people just don't seem to have much respect for, and some of that's been earned. But the fact of the matter is that we need to make sure that if we're going to be representing our communities, especially for those of us that are actually operational folks, I mean, we're actually in charge of operations that provide services to our communities. We need to make sure that those folks are happy with what we do. And the only way that we know that we're doing the right thing, with the exception of these amazing call-in radio shows, is to have people vote for us. And you know, regardless of what you're running for, you generally, one of the things that you do is you go out and knock on doors and right. you say, hi, you know, I'm John Dennis. I'm running for mayor. What do you think? And, you know, when you get that positive feedback, it makes you feel like you're doing the right thing. And that hopefully translates at the polls. But if people don't show up, if you get, you know, 20% of the population that shows up, what does that tell you? You know, that tells you that either the population is not very engaged or that you're so successful that people just seem to think that there's no point in pulling a lever.
And you just assume the latter?
Yeah, no, I don't. Okay. Like I said, I'm a tall dork. People see me in the store all the time and they don't hesitate to let me know what I've done wrong today. But the fact of the matter is that it is an issue that we often deal with. But with all that we have going on now, with all the social media, with all the televised media, with things that we have at just our fingertips, you would think that people would be enlightened to the point where they would want to go out and exercise one of the most precious rights we have in this country, and that's the right of voting.
Do you have any plans to do things as a city to encourage people to get out to vote?
We basically, you know, do the default process. We put it on our Facebook page. We tweet about it and those sort of things. And then at our public meetings, it's often referenced. This is Election Day. Get out and vote, you know, and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And, you know, hopefully people pay attention. How about you guys?
Oh, we're all over it, Mayor Dennis. Don't you worry about
we're
that.
We're all over.
We got another listener question. It says, you've talked on the program before about IU Health Arnett building a small hospital on the new 231 bypass. They've purchased a 40-acre parcel, but mm-hmm. where is it exactly? And I guess where is that process?
Well, first off, if I didn't make a correction here, the people at the Franciscans would
Uh-oh.
Be really angry.
Uh-oh.
It's actually the sisters that would be putting
okay.
the facility out there. Well, soon you will see a sign, excuse me, soon you will see a sign that will give a little bit more of an understanding of what's going to go on out there. The location is actually where we're going to be putting a stoplight in cooperation with the
okay.
state.
Yep.
And that's at the intersection of Cumberland and New 231.
Yep.
And if you just accept the fact that Cumberland is north and south, and it would be on the northeast corner.
Okay.
Okay, because I'm situationally dyslexic. It's very difficult for me to get that in my mind as well. But the fact of the matter is that we're still having conversations with the sisters, and we're trying to figure out what's going to be the best fit there. You know, I know in some of the conversations that we've had, philosophically, you know, we're sort of transitioning. I know in healthcare, and I'm way out of my league here, but I know in healthcare, it used to be, if you don't feel good, here's your hospital bed, here's your doctor, he's going to make sure that you're okay. Well, now they can do a lot of that preliminary treatment at a clinic. And the hope is to keep the actual bed numbers down. So using that philosophical approach, we hope we might be able to have a facility like that out there. And again, hope. And second off, it would be really nice to have some sort of an emergency department out there. And again, hope. So we're in communication. They've already purchased the land. And now it's just a matter of seeing if their revenue isn't so busy working for itself right now that they might be able to expend a little bit to have something in West Lafayette.
It would be nice, just because as the hospital started to move onto the outskirts mm-hmm. of the city, I know those of us who live in the western parts of West Lafayette and mm-hmm. the county out there kind of feel far removed mm-hmm. from emergency medical care. So.
Well, when we have 40,000 folks around here that are at that experimental age between 18 and 26. And there's a lot of accidents that happen, whether it be poor choices or just something unfortunate. And it is. We feel as though this is the right time to have that happen. 231 is a great thoroughfare. We'll have it signalized hopefully sometime next month, and it would be a perfect opportunity.
Well, we can transition to poor choices into the new Narcan program that the West Lafayette Police Department is going to mm-hmm. implement. And actually, the county has said that they're going to do the same. Basically, what it is Narcan is a drug that either can be given by nasal spray, which is what West Lafayette's going to do, or there's mm-hmm. also like an EpiPen version mm-hmm. of it mm-hmm. as well. And it reverses the effects of a heroin overdose. Mm-hmm. And I don't think when most people think West Lafayette, mm-hmm. they think heroin.
Mm-hmm.
So explain what you know about the program and why did the city even think to do this?
Well, the program itself is just like you said. It is a way to prevent a potential death because of a heroin overdose or an opiate overdose. And the fact of the matter is that in the city of West Lafayette, as is in most communities, drugs are somewhat fashionable. They sort of run through a cyclical period. And there are certain opportunities that people who are involved in the drug business take advantage of. And it's almost, and this is horrible to say, but it's almost like a business. You know, you realize that there's a certain product that is more expensive than another product, and so that tends to have draw the market towards that other product. The price of heroin's gone way down, and so it is a popular choice now. You know, some of the other drugs, methamphetamines and some of the other synthesized drugs are more expensive. And the business model of, you know, illegal activity sometimes reflects, again, other business models. And so they're going to try and get a market. And they're going to get a market by having this product go at a very cheap rate. Well, so here's what happens. You come into a rather affluent community. Drugs are cheap. There's not a lot of information about it out there anymore. Kids are going to experiment, and sometimes those experiments are going to head south. That's what's happened lately. There was a situation involving a family where a child, unfortunately, overdosed, and by the time the emergency folks got there, it was too late. Now we have an option. Now there's something that we can do, because there's nothing that makes a police officer, a firefighter, or a paramedic feel more powerless when there's somebody that's there, you don't know what's wrong with them, and you're limited with how you can treat. Now we have some ways to detect what's going on, and we have an immediate treatment. It is, and the best way to sort of make it comparative, it is like an EpiPen. You get the stuff into their system, you get the cure into their system, and that basically it stabilizes so they can get to the emergency department and get some more specific treatment.
And absolutely, because I guess it's important to note that even though there have been some cases where they say people have gotten up off of a gurney after getting Narcan, people still have to be seen at the hospital afterwards. So basically every first responder in West Lafayette will have this available to them.
That's our hope, yes.
To use.
And they will be properly trained, and we will have a medical advisor that will make sure that we're doing it the right way. But, you know, and other questions have been asked, like, okay, you have somebody that's obviously overdosed on an illegal drug. Are you going to go ahead and revive them and then arrest them? And absolutely not. This is all about public safety. You know, I mean, we have all these different mechanisms to, you know, interfere with people's lives, but we also have the same mechanisms to improve people's lives and to save people's lives. That's where we're gearing towards here in West Lafayette. We want to make sure if somebody accidentally overdoses or deliberately overdoses, we want to be there quickly. We want to be able to provide something that's going to save their life and get them into either a medical facility for emergency treatment, and then hopefully, after the fact, maybe another facility for drug treatment.
And that's what I was going to follow up with, too, because I know when I talked to the Indianapolis Public Safety Director, Troy Riggs, he was saying with their program, they've saved, you know, hundreds of lives, I think, so far. But he said what they realized was that they were giving Narcan to some of the same people over and over and over, because you've stopped the overdose, but you're not addressing the underlying problem of drug addiction. So they are starting to really layer in the social services aspect of it as well. Is that something that West Lafayette plans to have as part of their program?
In conversations with Chief Jason Dumkowski and Chief Tim Heath, Tim's our fire chief, and Jason obviously is our police chief. They get it. You know, they get it. They realize their role in this community. And they realize the fact that, sure, I mean, you can be, you know, the old, you know, Joe Friday police officer, or you can be what society demands of its police officers today. You need to be more empathetic. You need to understand that mistakes are made. You need to be tolerant. You need to have a strong, strong, strong sense of self-control. That's what people want. That's what they expect of their law enforcement. And believe me, that's what I expect of my law enforcement as well.
Well, I look at the West Lafayette Police Department, too, and I find it kind of interesting. It's a fairly small police department, respective to others in the state, but they seem to be on the forefront of some of this newer stuff. The body cameras, when that became a big issue around Ferguson and everything, well, West Lafayette was already doing it. And the same thing with this Narcan. I mean, I don't think that you, like I said, would automatically think who's going to be a good test for this. You may think, you know, Lafayette, but you wouldn't think West Lafayette. What is it about the department that they're kind of out on the forefront of some of these things?
Well, I mean, basically, Chief Dumkowski, Jason Dumkowski, is a real smart guy. I mean, he believes in doing research. He believes in keeping up on the things that are happening in the law enforcement community. And then all of us learn lessons, unfortunately, by other people's mistakes. You know, West Lafayette is not like most communities. You know, we have been talking earlier on about our 40,000 student residents and the folks that actually reside here. We're pretty smart, you know, and for the most part, we're pretty affluent. And we need to make sure that we model our enforcement approach after our community, you know. It used to be the old adage, cookie cutter cop, cookie cutter cop. And that meant that regardless of what happened, you had a certain standard that you would abide by and you would enforce those laws regardless of anything. Well, if you just continually throw people in jail, if you continually warehouse people, that doesn't solve the problem. And where we are right now societally is we need to learn how to solve problems from the street level to the prosecutor's level to the jail level. And if you just incarcerate somebody, the only thing they know is that they got caught. They're never going to learn how to make themselves better. They're never going to learn how to stop doing some of that behaviors, those behaviors that get them in trouble. Jason gets that. His officers get that. And there are certain things that they do now that you would never have seen done in the West Lafayette Police Department.
So we got a few minutes left here, and we're talking about how smart and maybe more affluent West Lafayette residents are, but at least one poll of, I'm doing air quotes,
man,
experts.
I knew this was going to happen.
is not a fan. It's a poll of Big Ten experts recently ranked West Lafayette as the worst city in the conference. Did you have any reaction to that? Do you put any stock into that kind of thing?
I had a lot of reactions to it, but I can't say what those were on the radio. The fact of the matter is that we know what we've got here. You know, we know what's great about West Lafayette. We know what makes us one of the best communities in the state of Indiana. We know what makes Purdue one of the best universities in the world. And our belief system is that what we've been doing is such a great success, we're going to continue to do it. And if a bunch of guys who are sports announcers feel that we could probably improve the environment here, actually, I'm going to be doing the sports show on TV 18 on WLFI.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, or not. And we will prove that guys who do sports should stay with sports and guys that run cities should stay running cities, because it's obviously going to be a train wreck. But, I mean, it's fun. You know, they do these things for fun. And what they use as a comparative is how much of a party environment you have or something to that effect. But what we know here in West Lafayette is we got a great thing going on. It's a great community, and we've got a great relationship with Purdue, and we're quite satisfied. And anything that is four off should, I mean, it's the Big Ten, and they've got 14.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, how much credibility can they have?
We got one comment from a listener, actually. Jane called in. She wanted to talk about the trash question, and she says billing for trash is no different than paying city taxes that support schools, and you have to pay them even if you don't have children. And so you're supporting a service, mm-hmm. which is kind of what you were saying mm-hmm. with getting the fees for the trash collection mm-hmm. as well.
Absolutely.
So you got big plans for the summer?
Yeah, well, hopefully. You know, again, we're going to be busy around here, because as we alluded to earlier, is that we've often, you know, use this downtime as to an opportunity for us to get our equipment in shape, to get our roads in shape. We're going to be spending a lot of time cutting grass, a lot of time cleaning pools and those sort of things. But for the city of West Lafayette, and I think for most college towns, you will find that when the students go away, it's our opportunity to sort of polish up what we've already feeling very proud about. It's our time to make our community really shine. And we still, I mean, one of the things that people often forget is we have a lot of visitors that come through our community during the summer. We got a lot of students who visit with their parents who are busy looking at universities. So we want to make sure we have our best foot forward. Then we have a lot of conventions and a lot of different social events where people come over here as well.
Well, great. Thanks so much for being with us. Then we'll talk to you again next month.
You got it.
Stay tuned next week on Ask the Mayor. We'll have Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. And as always, if you have any questions for any of our mayors, you can send an email to ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet @WBAA News on Twitter. Thanks so much for joining me today for Ask the Mayor. Have a great rest of the day. I'm Kristen Malavenda.